Hello and welcome to this episode of the Functional Nurse Podcast. My name is Bridget Sager and I'm your host. I am a family nurse practitioner and I teach functional medicine for nurses through the Integrative Nurse Coach Academy in partnership with the Institute for Functional Medicine. And today I am interviewing Rita Wadhwani, and she is a nurse practitioner that is here to share some of her functional medicine insights. So I'm really excited about that. Thank you, Rita, for being here with us.
Yeah, thank you, Bridget, for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I am going to share a little bit about your background and then we can chat. Rita is an acute care nurse practitioner and a clinical nurse specialist. She has a baccalaureate in biochemistry, and so I want to hear some about that, and a master's in nursing from UCLA, where she graduated with honors, including outstanding graduate student. Over the course of her 25-year history in nursing, Rita has cultivated three unique subspecialties: adult cardiology, neonatology, and functional integrative medicine. Her background has uniquely positioned her to understand the role of microbiome science from birth into adulthood. Rita has spent several years performing nursing missions in her birthplace of Pune, India, where she cultivated a sense of holism. Armed with over 25 years of experience in the traditional healthcare setting, Rita is now the owner and operator of iBiome Healthcare, a nurse-led practice which focuses on integrating holistic and functional biochemistry to manage chronic health conditions. I love how many times biochemistry came up in there, because I talk to my students all the time about how much of functional medicine is honoring the importance of that and taking care of our patients.
Yeah, biochemistry and our interaction with the environment and how our biochemistry interacts with the things around us is really the crux of functional medicine. And if you understand that and learn how to manipulate it accordingly, then that's the science in itself.
So I wanted to start by asking you to share your journey. You kind of have touched on it already, but like from becoming a nurse, what led you to become a nurse and how did you get to ultimately practicing functional medicine?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to be a nurse and I've been really lucky and have had a ton of great opportunities through UCLA for myself. I kind of grew up there. I was a nurse's assistant, then became an LVN, then became an RN. And I did this very unique program. And I think we were the last class of that program in 2005 at UCLA, where it was an associate degree nurse to a master's prepared nurse. And in that program, there was a baccalaureate in chemistry that was being studied. And so it's a really tough program because you essentially do that chemistry degree in 18 months. Oh, you're matriculated in, you're doing it with the 20-year-old students on campus as a returning nurse. But it really set me up to be, I feel, you know, practice my nurse practitioner practice. And then it's really set me up well for functional medicine as well. After I had my second son, I was diagnosed with Graves' disease and became pretty chronically ill with it, and really felt like the conventional system didn't have a lot to offer me other in terms of healing. I mean, they're there to treat you, but they're not necessarily there to help you heal. And through functional medicine, I was able to use those principles and protocols to heal my own Graves' disease. And after that, I started guest lecturing about it. And I did a couple of lectures because I was like, wow, I wish someone would have taught me all of this stuff, and maybe it would have changed the trajectory of my own health story. And so I started guest lecturing because I was working as a CNS at the time. And I did a few lectures for the FNP students at UCLA and as an introduction to functional medicine. And after that, I had a NP student come to me and say, hey, I really related to the things that you have said and what you were lecturing about and the holistic approach to healthcare. and I would like you to be my NP. And I was like, oh, no, no, no. I'm working as a CNS. I have my hospital position. I'm doing a lot of teaching. I don't have a practice. Let me refer you to a couple of folks. And she was incredibly persistent and wouldn't take no for an answer. And I very quickly put a jimmied together a practice. And at the start of our work, she was referred for GI weight loss management and derm clinic. And 6 months into my journey with her, she lost 60 pounds and did not need any of those three referrals. And really, I didn't GI map her. I didn't do any hormone testing on her. I didn't do any of the fancy things that functional medicine has to offer, which I love those things. And there is a time and a place for those. But I did basic lifestyle, stress management, honoring her own individual biochemistry, teaching her how to reconnect with her body and understand her body's cues and then respond accordingly to them. And after that, I was like, wow, this is great and it's working and I'm having good outcomes. And I slowly built my practice over time from that one NP student who was my first patient.
Has she gone on to follow in your footsteps, do you feel like? I feel like she would have learned a lot.
Yeah, she's actually, I feel like once you see the science on this side of the world and you take this approach for your own health status, you can't unsee it. And, you know, I had a mentor of mine say, the more you do this work, the harder it becomes to do that work. And so she did start getting some training and has been pursuing it herself and now has a big goal to have her own practice also.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that you had one person like nag you. And so what we were just talking about, I feel like so many nurses, especially when I interview nurses that are in my course, they'll talk about how they came to functional medicine. And it's really aligned with what you just said. Like they'll have their own health struggles or somebody close to them. And they find that what you're speaking to, like you can't unsee it. Once you figure out that there's a different way to help people, that's really like impactful and profound. Like we're not just prescribing medications and sending them off to come back for refill six months later.
Right.
They're truly getting better. You can't unsee that. And that's actually, that's absolutely how I felt too.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is for me, I'm born in and from India and migrated here. And I felt like almost that mainstream or conventional medicine or allopathy kind of pulled me away from those holistic roots. And when you really do dig deep into what functional medicine is, it's really not new science. And it has been around in other cultures as a part of their medical systems for a very long time. And they've not been doing the fancy testing for decades. You know, Ayurveda is 3,000 years old of a medical system originated in India. And a lot of the concepts in functional medicine are aligned with Ayurvedic medicine or traditional Chinese medicine. So I feel like it's really just kind of going back to our roots and the past and how our ancestors also managed chronic health issues through their own lifestyle at their given time. And we've gotten as a community and as a society so far away from that. I call it living in the concrete jungle. And so it becomes harder and harder to implement the holistic lifestyle in a concrete jungle. And for me, you know, I work a lot. I have two sons and I say to my patients, if I can do it, you can do it as well. And it may be a little bit harder, but I really feel like the crux of this work does lie with nursing because it's health coaching and we are the ultimate health coaches. And I hear doctors say all the time, oh, this patient is non-compliant or they won't do this. Let's just put them on a statin or whatnot. But it's not that patients are non-compliant and don't want to get better. They just don't know how. And in the conventional system, we don't have time to sit with them. Like I spend an hour at every follow-up appointment, sometimes even even more than that with my patients. And that's really getting into the root cause of what their own individual barriers are to live this lifestyle. And so I think if you start understanding that and really dig into what is going on in their individual lives, then they aren't really non-compliant. They just don't know how or are stuck or have individual barriers and challenges that maybe we can't address during a 15 or 20 minute appointment in clinic, or, you know, during an acute crisis during a hospital admission. So, you know, I think we have some systemic barriers in allopathy, but nurses are really the ones that do all the teaching with the patients and hold their hand and understand them and communicate with them. And I think nurses are positioned primarily, even more than any other specialty, to do this work with their patients.
Absolutely. And, you know, that term non-compliant drives me crazy, because, you know, in nurse coaching, the way that we talk about that is something that I know you're going to relate to is how we go from nursing to nurse practitioner school, and nurse practitioners are taught how to think in the medical model and the diagnose and treat. And it's a lot of prescriptions or surgery, or, you know, there's an intervention that's very, not very holistic. And, I feel like I stepped away from nursing a little bit when I started practicing as a nurse practitioner and being put in those time constraints. And so I feel like the non-compliant part is saying they're non-compliant with a plan that they never even necessarily agreed to. It's what we were taught to tell them they were going to go do, instead of saying, what do you need to work on? What's going on at home? Or even saying, what are the odds that you're going to be successful at the thing I just told you to go do? Right.
And it removes the individuality. Right. So one of the things I love about functional medicine is this concept of N equals one. I mean, in our field, we know that when we look at data and we look at studies, the greater the number of participants in the study, the greater the number of N is, the better the data. And then we tend to take that and create protocols off of it and are very protocol driven. But in functional medicine, and this is where I think it's going to be very challenging to get more studies and get more allopaths on board, is we're not going to be able to get those large randomized controlled trials because N really does equal one. And in my practice, if I'm, you know, addressing hypertension with a patient, the treatment program that I use for that hypertension is going to be different with three different patients that have hypertension, because it's taking into account their own individual lifestyle, their own individual diet, and their own individual genetics mm-hmm. as well, and what their own capability is. So I've gone from, I mean, I kind of tease about this, but I used to be a cardiology NP. I've gone from prescribing beta blockers to deprescribing them now. I use lifestyle and taper patients off of their medications quite often. And, you know, it's just, we just don't have the time for that level of individuality in allopathy yet. And I think we will get there. The tides are very slowly changing and people are paying attention. And I think the pandemic did help a little bit with that, but we're just not there yet.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to segue a little bit into, you were talking about India and your hometown, and I have had several nurses do the course that are trained, they're Ayurvedic nurses, and so they have way more insight into that practice than I do. And you mentioned that you had taken what you had learned home, and so I was wondering if you could share a little bit about that experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I went back to India, it was doing medical missions and nursing missions with our chief of neonatology at that time at UCLA. And we were actually opening a brand new NICU and in my hometown. But when I was there, I was able to meet with other providers outside of the hospital. And it's like this really old school system of where you have a community doctor, and that community doctor really treats everything from NU, and there are not 18 subspecialists involved, and they do house calls and they treat your family. And one of the mainstays of treatment, even in the allopathic community there, is herbal medicine. And so, and because it does, it is the crux of the medical system. Ayurveda is the crux of the medical system in India, but Ayurveda also treats energies and relates that to the gut microbiome in the form of doshas. And so I learned quite a bit, but then, you know, and then when I came back here, I was an ICU nurse and then became an adult cardiology nurse. And that also was a hospital-based position. I just felt like it always pulled me away from that, those types of natural and holistic systems. And for a while, you know, I didn't even realize that that was happening until I got into functional medicine and saw how far away from those systems, which are basically at the base of my roots, my own indigenous roots, how far away I had gotten from all of that. And so now, you know, I truly believe that yes, allopathy is still needed. The conventional system is still needed, but I try to pluck from every aspect. I use a little bit of traditional Chinese medicine and I use a little bit of Ayurvedic medicine in my patients. But I use the safety nets that allopathy has provided us. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that it's a very us against them world out there still in holistic health and conventional health. But I come from the standpoint that we need each other, and we have become so advanced in technology and other things that it is important to really not shut one system out altogether.
I think that what you just said about the safety net of allopathic medicine is important to acknowledge, because there is so much that we learn about how to practice safely and to evaluate like supplements and medications, right, or whether an intervention is appropriate for this patient, right, based on their chronic health history, right, maybe. And I think that that is important. And I really try to bring that up a lot with nurses, is that it isn't us against them. It's, you know, there are going to be people that don't want what we have to offer. And for them, the best plan is going to be a statin and a beta blocker, yes, you know, right, and that is proven to be the best plan for people that are not ready to make big changes, right? Yeah. And so we're not here to like say one is right and one is wrong, but rather what can we offer the people that don't want those options? I was thinking about how many nurses talk about, when you were talking about hometown and Ayurveda and then coming back, a lot of nurses say to me, what I offer my patients at work is just doesn't align with what I do for myself and my family at home. And that reminded me of what you were just saying, is that, you know, if we're practicing more holistically and we're not offering that to our patients, it kind of feels incongruent, you know, and so many nurses are called to become nurses, you know, for reasons that we start to feel pulled away from that, I think.
Yeah. It almost becomes an ethical dilemma for us. And, you know, I felt that a lot during the pandemic, going into work every day. It was really tough. And again, I always go back to that line that one of my mentors gave me, is when you start getting deeper and deeper into the science of this work, it pulls you away from the science of that work, and you start seeing and understanding the flaws. And I come from, you know, I was pretty sick when I first got diagnosed with Graves' disease, and I had a friend who was practicing functional medicine on herself for her own autoimmune disease. And she used to say to me all the time, Rita, you really need to get this book. You really need to go see this provider, or you really need to understand some of this stuff. And at that time, I was working as an NP/CNS, and I would round. She was a nurse, and I would see her patients, and she'd be in her room, you know, reading some of that book. And I would say, no, no, no. I have a great physician and I don't need that stuff. And I really kind of poo-pooed it and thought, okay, well, you know, food science isn't a real thing. And unfortunately, I feel because of that, I'm even better equipped to be able to speak with physicians and other providers who are not into it and say to them, this is what you really need to see, because there is a little bit of quackery out there. And you know, sometimes I think some providers can't align us that are really, truly practicing holistic health from a biochemical standpoint with some of that quackery. And so if you can now hand them, and there are quite a few papers out there from very legitimate peer-reviewed journals, if you can hand them that literature and speak to them in their language, then that might turn a few heads a little bit more. And I've had a lot of luck doing that. I often will even send letters to providers, like to the primary care doctors of my patients, and quote a lot of the literature and share the literature and the science. Now, I think some of them are into it and some of them are not, but most of them will just say, hey, if it's working for you, keep doing it. It is evidence-based now. And it's not mainstream, but it certainly is evidence-based at this point. And so it's tough. I think that for nurses, it is, you can't unsee that. And it does sometimes become an ethical dilemma for patients or for nurses that are delivering care on the inpatient side. But what I would say to them is really understand that it's a flaw of the system and not necessarily the provider. And it's the systemic barriers that are going, even, you know, if you have a whole team of physicians that are into this and want to do this, there are going to be systemic barriers to that process more than anything, you know?
I agree. And I think that's a really good message for nurses to hear, you know, because I talk with nurses about that a lot, is like, how do I talk to my peers about this? Or how do I tell people at work what I'm learning? Yeah. And how it, I mean, and so, you know, I say often, like, you know, sometimes people want evidence and I'm like, do you still have your biochemistry textbook? Because there's, you know, you can't deny that there's cellular demand, right, but we don't acknowledge it, right, in the allopathic model, mm-hmm, like really at all, yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think more and more you're talking about research, and I feel more and more we're going to be able to cohort people into, if sleep apnea was the cause of your hypertension, if a nutrient deficiency that was, you know, a burden, right, on the cells is the root cause, you can cohort people in that way and prove that it's effective. But we can't just say, does this one thing fix this diagnosis, yeah, right? Like, that just doesn't work. So I think we're getting there where we're acknowledging that we need to, like, find, and I think the genetic testing really helps too, right? When we find, okay, these folks that have this predisposition to this probably have a similar root cause. And, right, so if we can group them and then see what happens when we do an intervention, and, yes, and when it involves supplements, we use quality supplements, right. You know, there's, right, so many factors.
Yeah. Because I will get patients quite often on like 20 and 30 supplements that are still not feeling better. And I say to them, why are we taking all of these if your root cause has not truly been addressed? And, you know, the supplement company, unregulated as it is a $1 billion company, and people like me want it to be regulated, but there are going to be a whole bunch of issues that come with that regulation as well. And so it's tough. I'm actually really excited to see where our field in holistic health is going. I think it's going to be driven by patient demand, as it is already, and patients are the ones that are pushing this work forward. And, you know, back to what you said, is to take a little bit of everything. Patients have a choice now, and they can choose what they want and don't want. And I have a few patients, for example, if I GI map someone and we find a really significant burden of an H. pylori infection, I give them a choice. We can do it the slow and low holistic way, or we can do it the allopathic way. And it is your body and it is for you to decide. And so I think moving forward in the next couple of decades in this field, I'm going to be really curious to see what the choice is of patients. And it's really tough doing some of this work and living this lifestyle in this concrete jungle with the demands of our day-to-day. But that's what we need to look at, are those demands and really how to balance that and reprioritize our health. Sometimes I think statins just give people an excuse to not prioritize their diet. And so, yep. You know, I can look at both sides of it, but I think nurses, given our background, and especially nurse practitioners, given our background, we do need to look at both sides of it. We do need to look at the holistic approach and the allopathic approach and give patients a choice and see what they can do and encourage them and coach them accordingly based on what we feel is the best outcome for them.
I agree 100%. I think the biggest thing that I wanted to talk about today, I kind of want to introduce the topic to my audience because you know why I asked you here today. But I know my students know this, but a lot of listeners probably don't. So I'm finishing my doctorate right now. It's a post-master's DNP. And I'm working on trying to get people off of specific, we're talking right now about, you know, prescription medications versus holistic approach. And I'm working with a gastroenterology clinic to figure out why is deprescribing such a barrier? Why are people staying on PPIs long-term? And the impact of weak stomach acid on so many systems in the body. So that's my focus.
Amazing. I think that's beautiful work. And it's going to be very important work moving forward as well.
And I was like, I want to find another, because I can get on here and record myself talking about that for an hour, right? Like that's easy, but I feel like it's better to have a conversation with another nurse. And so I tried to find a nurse or a nurse practitioner that feels like they have really had some experience helping people with this. It's so foundational to functional medicine that we get people to have strong stomach acid and good digestion for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so I would love for you to speak to your experience in helping people with that.
Yeah, it's where I start. It's my starting point of everything is with the stomach acid, because I'm really into microbiome medicine and have studied the microbiome quite a bit, and almost am a little obsessed with it. And so even in Ayurveda, everything starts with what is your stomach acid doing and whether you have a fire or a calmness in your stomach. And we know so much about PPIs now and the consequences of them. And I think they are an easy fix. And there are a lot of fallacies out there about PPIs, but everything comes back to stomach acid. So going back to even those patients that that actually have a, you know, come to me on 30 and plus, you know, even more supplements, I say to them, what is the status of your stomach acid? And really, we can take away a lot of these if people are not digesting. They are not able to heal at all. And so we know that stomach acid is, you know, as nurses, we know it's a pH of 1 to 3. An alkaline stomach, the data is now showing, actually leads to more dysbiosis or dysbiotic gut. In the past, we haven't really given a lot of credence to the microbiome in the gut, but really the microbiome in the gut is the foundation. The stomach acid is the foundational principle of balancing that microbiome. It kills this. I call the gut a playground. There are good kids on the playground. There are bad kids on the playground. We in holistic health, we want all the kids to stick around the playground as long as they're balanced and no one's acting like a bully or acting out or anything like that. But in allopathy and conventional medicine, the use of PPIs, the use of antibiotics, it really kills all the kids on the playground. And we now know that the microbes are important messengers for our immune system. And our immune system dysregulation in this country is off the charts. For per capita spending on healthcare, we are the number 2 country in the world in terms of our budget for spending, but we are in the lowest 2 in terms of our outcomes of healthcare. And I believe that if you just preserve stomach acid in a particular patient, that entire trajectory, no matter what their health issues are, will change. And so really, that's one of the main reasons that I like to use the GI map is, and I don't even GI map patients right off the bat. I'll work with them for a good 3 to 4 months, change around their diet, change around their lifestyle, And then if that hasn't really repaired or healed a lot of the issues that they come to me with, then we'll GI map them and see what the state of their digestion is. And when you fix that, their whole world changes. Everything changes for them. And inflammation decreases, everything decreases because you're promoting the presence of those good guys, the good gut bacteria. We also see quite often, you know, with patients with low stomach acid or hypochlorhydria, have a significant amount of dysbiosis from the oral cavity. And so, you know, there's a different microbiome profile in the oral cavity versus in the stomach. And when some of these bugs get down to the stomach where they're not supposed to be, or stomach acid is supposed to kill them. But we've seen studies now where actually these bugs up here in the oral cavity are ending up in the small intestine and the large intestine. And that's because of the lack of stomach acid there to be able to kill them, so they don't proceed along the digestive tract. And that those guys are the good guys, eliminating those good guys and having this overgrowth and this dysbiosis of the bad microbiome or the bad microbes really leads to a decrease in short chain fatty acids and all of those other good metabolites that are secreted that are now being tied to mental health. We've got major mental health crises in this country as well that are being tied to immunogenic health, that's being tied to colon cancer and other inflammatory and metabolic diseases like cardiovascular disease and diabetes. We know the presence of Firmicutes in the gut microbiome is really a great preventative factor for diabetes and heart disease. So for me, stomach acid is where I start. If you don't have that, that's the first thing that we're going to be fixing. And we are a stressed out nation where we don't sit down eat our meals. I mean, you and I both did this. I used to carry nuts in my white coat and work my 12-hour shifts and just eat on the go and not take my breaks and do all that jazz. And, you know, I did a lecture last year for the American Academy of Critical Care Nurses. And I said, you know, you can fix your stomach acid by just sitting down to eat. You can improve the status of your stomach acid by sitting down to eat and chewing your food. I want nurses to take their breaks. Yes. Sit down to eat and chew your food. And I've had patients send me, you know, memes, teasing me, because I tell them I want them to chew 15 to 30 times with each bite. And they're like, I feel like a goat and it's taking me an hour to finish my meal. And I say, that is the way it's supposed to be. And those are the principles even in Ayurvedic medicine that they teach. You pray before a meal and you sit down for your meal. And these are very simple concepts. And this is functional medicine. And you don't need a GI map to be able to coach and teach a patient to sit down and eat and chew better so that they're secreting adequate amount of digestive enzymes in their saliva so that they're nurturing and preserving their stomach acid in their gut. These are all basic things that nurses really are already we already have the tools to do that and to teach patients that and lead that. And like I said, in my patients for the first 3 to 4 months, if we were to GI map everyone just right off the street without even changing their diet a little bit, everyone would be incredibly dysbiotic and have poor digestion. So I usually, my way is to say, let's clean up your diet a little bit and balance how you're eating and teach you how to sit down for meals and honor your meals a little bit more. And then fix some of those digestion issues off, like those are your low hanging fruit things that you can take off that tree. Then if you're still having gut issues, then we GI map you 3, 4, 5 months down the line. And then we can see what true root cause imbalances and dysbiosis you have existing there. And that's worked really well for me. It's less costly for patients. I've heard of patients going to functional providers, leaving with $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 in tests without even addressing things like lifestyle. And really, again, to address lifestyle, nurses are positioned better than anyone else in the field, in my opinion, to be able to do this work with their patients. And you don't need fancy tests to be able to preserve stomach acid. And here's the thing, is that this is how you can bring functional medicine to the the low income population by one bottle of apple cider vinegar to support stomach acid production in patients as well. So there, it doesn't have to be an expensive fix, and it's just teaching people how to manage their stress and preserve their stomach acid. And, you know, I usually have patients, I've had a few patients come to me on PPIs. Patients come to me that are like popping Tums all the time. And once you teach them and help them understand, they drive that own process themselves, and they don't want the drug. And so it's convincing the providers that they don't need it, that sometimes needs to happen. But usually I coach patients on how to do that. This is what I want you to say to your doctor. This is how you address it with your doctor. And that seems to have more of a power than coming from provider to provider.
I was thinking about, you know, I feel like the hypertension example is always a great one that's really relatable for nurses. And you were talking about the oral microbiome. So I didn't want to forget to mention that. That made me think, you know, how often is oral health the root cause of something like hypertension? Because like you said, that bacteria should not be making it through the stomach, and it is. And then it's causing inflammation in the body. And the many roles that stomach acid plays just isn't given the credence that it deserves in healthcare. Because like you mentioned, it's immune health, it's digestion. And you mentioned people coming to you with 30 plus supplements. And that's certainly my experience too. And I'm really bummed that we can't find a way to separate ourselves from people that say they practice functional medicine, the definition being root cause medicine.
Yeah. Not there yet.
And it's like, we are looking at root cause. Other people are selling supplements. There's no such thing. You really touched on this before, and I wanted to circle back. There's no such thing as protocols in true functional medicine. You can't sell protocols because, like you said, three different people have three different root causes. And so to talk about those supplements for a minute, something I see often when I look at some training that is offered in not root cause functional medicine is get a NutriEval on every new patient and look at what they're lacking in, and then you can sell them the supplements. And that is why people come to us on all of these supplements that are fundamental nutrients that they should be getting in their diet. And it isn't even that it's not in their food. It's that they're on a PPI or they're not chewing. Their stomach acid isn't sufficient. And if we can just get them to chew and the concept of, I feel like telling people, you know, we need the stomach acid and here's five reasons why. And it is not, GERD is not about too much stomach acid. It's about stomach acid in the wrong place. We want it that strong. We don't want it popping back up.
Right.
And that's when people have symptoms. So we want them to understand we need it to stay down here. And here's some things that you might be doing that are contributing to that, like not being in resting and digesting mode, having huge meals and lots of beverages with meals, and really basic things that highlight what you keep bringing up is that, you know, it's our modern lifestyle. This wasn't a problem 100 years ago. There's way more indigestion and people needing PPIs because our lifestyles have changed and it's not compatible with life. It really isn't, right?
It's not compatible with a comfortable life.
Right. Yeah. A long and healthy life. Yeah. And when you're helping people with this, I want to touch on like getting people off PPIs because that's an art. And I want to touch on like what you see, what changes do you see in people when you address their stomach acid?
Oh, it's amazing what you will see. I mean, I'm really, this work, I always feel it fills my heart so much. And I always feel like I live every good outcome with my patients, because when you replete their stomach acid and they don't have any more indigestion and bloating, you'll be amazed at how many people just continue on in life with reflux and indigestion and bloating and not really giving that the credence that it deserves. Those things over a long period of time, it may take a decade of that for some people, it may take longer for some people, it may take shorter, will lead to cancers and other types of erosive and inflammatory diseases. And so when you teach patients that that's not normal and it's not okay to pop a Tums every time you do that, and it's not okay to take PPIs to treat those things and the consequences of that, they are more willing, you know, to contribute to coming off. And when I do get them off, everything changes. And the biggest change that's even been eye-opening for me is their mental health. And you see quite a few consequences from that gut brain access that goes on, that when you fix digestion, there's a significant improvement in that as well. And I've got quite a few mental health patients in my practice that are on medications and have significant dysbiosis. And given their, when you fix that dysbiosis, I've even in conjunction with their providers been able to detaper them off of their brain meds and their mind meds. And so it really changes everything. And patients even say, I feel less inflamed. When you take them off of a PPI, replete that stomach acid and improve their digestion, there is a feeling. And to me, I call those are the symptoms that are in between everything, right? So when you go to the doctor's office and you say to them, I just don't feel great, they're going to look at markers and numbers and values. And if everything looks okay, they're going to say, it's you're doing great, have a nice day. But that patient is still left saying, I just don't feel great. And so it's those things, those nitty gritty symptoms in between all that data that people walk around with every day. Those are the things that get better. The sleeplessness, the anxiety even gets improved when you replete stomach acid and improve digestion, but also the ability to enjoy your food. And so, and I think that is something that we've also gotten so far away from our roots. And, you know, children think that enjoying food means eating a bowl of sugar, but that's really not the true type of culinary consumption we want them to have, or the happiness that we want them to have in association with that culinary consumption. So I've been really successful in detapering patients off PPI just using lifestyle and just using things like apple cider vinegar and changing some of their supplements around and things like that. Those patients, you know, you mentioned the NutriVal, and those patients that have all those supplements that are repleting those deficiencies, true functional medicine is looking at the root cause of why those deficiencies occur, not treating those deficiencies, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where we kind of get into the allopathic mode of treatment as well, where you're just doing a test, you see a level that's low, and you're repleting it with a supplement. That's no different than, you know, treating a patient with a statin for a high, you know, hyperlipidemia. So it's really coming for that root cause and the biochemistry that is happening behind that deficiency. And quite often when you holistically correct that, the deficiency corrects itself.
Yes, because that test to me is, if you open up some people, I'll have a lot of patients that have seen a different provider before. They're on a ton of supplements. They upload their labs from the last few years. It includes a NutriEval, and everything is lit up. And to me, that says you're not digesting food, right? And what is in your diet?
Right.
And if they are like, I eat well and I take all my supplements religiously and I exercise and I meditate and I sleep well and I still don't feel great, then I'm like, okay, this test tells me not that you needed to buy all these supplements. Right. It tells me that you aren't getting that. It might go in your mouth, but that doesn't mean it got in your body.
Right.
And, you know, our GI tract is the outside of our body in theory, right? So it didn't get in where it needed to be. That's highly connected with our ability to digest our food and our strength of our stomach acid. And there's several steps beyond that, but this tends to be like you're talking about, the foundation of it. And if somebody is deficient in, you can tell they're deficient in magnesium, B vitamins. And, you know, one important connection that you started to touch on some is brain health. If they're not digesting protein, they're not getting amino acids to make neurotransmitters. That's a great reason to have anxiety or depression, right? Like if you can't even make the hormones that you need in your body to do the fundamentals, you're going to feel crummy.
Yeah.
And it is incredible to see somebody improve their digestion and not need, because if you address stomach acid, people tend to come down on their medications because they're also able to break down their medications and absorb them more effectively. Yeah. And so I see a lot of people that their mental health medications need to be reduced for so many reasons, because it's getting digested and absorbed better, and they're getting protein in that they need, and their immune system is working better, and inflammation is reduced, and their microbiome is balanced better. It's amazing how interconnected it all is.
It is. And that's work that nurses can do without the nutrient eval, without GI mapping, without all those fancy and expensive tests. And then you really do earn the respect and the buy-in of that patient, and then you can elevate their care and add on those tests later on if there's fine tuning that needs to be done. But the foundation is really, and you know, I always say to patients, I see you, because some of them are ordering their own tests and they're buying their own supplements and doing their own protocols. And I say to them, I see you. I see what you're doing. I understand you. And I'm sorry that you've had to go through so much and that you're trying to heal yourself. But let me guide your way in a little bit of a different path. And so it's like, you know, when I used to first get these patients on all these supplements, I'd be like, oh my gosh, no, this is such a waste of money and you don't need this stuff and you're not digesting. But now it's like, I understand them. They've been failed by other systemic, you know, healthcare providers, and they are really trying to heal themselves. And I say to them, you can heal yourself. We're just not going for the root cause. And so let's go for the root cause. And even sometimes those supplements are needed, but they should never be long-term, and they should definitely never be lifetime supplements. And so especially probiotics, I get really frustrated when I see patients on probiotics forever and ever, then they're not really fixing the root cause of what's going on in terms of colonizing their gut and balancing their gut. They're just popping a probiotic. And hey, if it were that easy to fix your gut health by just popping a probiotic, then everyone would do it and everyone would have better outcomes. But it's definitely not that easy. It's about feeding, seeding, and weeding the gut microbiome. And that takes lifestyle changes, not supplements.
Yep. I feel like, you know, there's evidence that there is some benefit for many people for omega-3s, for magnesium and vitamin D. But a lot of my students will say, but what about probiotics? And I say, no, I mean, if you are addressing somebody's diet and their gut balance and all the things we're talking about right now, they should be getting that from their diet. And there isn't this need to just constantly address that. So another thing that I wanted to talk about in this topic that I think not all nurses have this on their radar, and I think it's important to talk about if we're all going to be really passionate about getting people off of PPIs and tuning up their stomach acid, is that there is a phenomenon that is incredibly common for people to have rebound acid hypersecretion coming off proton pump inhibitors. Mm-hmm. And so within the first week or two of decreasing their dose in a stepwise fashion, which is what's part of the current deprescribing guidelines, is to do it stepwise, people can have breakthrough symptoms. And I have experienced so many people that say, no, I've tried to stop taking that before and my symptoms come back worse than ever. And nobody has told them that that is a phenomenon that is brief. It doesn't last very long. And what we can do as nurses and nurse practitioners is have a plan in place for them. Let them know it's going to happen.
Right.
And that there's another side of it.
Right.
And here's what we're going to do when it does happen. And we'll give them a couple tools that they can choose from.
Right.
And I think that's important to talk about, because a lot of people try to just stop a PPI, which isn't a great plan. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not very effective. They have those symptoms, or they do try a taper. I have like you're talking about informed people. And so many people come to us motivated and ready, and they just need an informed practitioner to walk them through where they're trying to get to.
Right.
And nurses are perfect for that. And in this case in particular, it's they need somebody to take 5 minutes to talk about why they might have stomach acid issues and how to safely transition off of the medication and know that there's going to be some symptoms maybe. And here's what we're going to do about it. And I'm going to see you on the other side of it, right? Because this happens, and let's just be real about it. And I don't think that happens like 5% of the time for people coming off PPIs, and it should.
So it depends on the amount of time a patient has been on a PPI. I will be even more conservative in terms of detapering them based on that symptomology that happens after. But also, one of the things that I teach patients is your body gets used to whatever you do to it. So if you are going to be eating burgers and fries every day and you suddenly start eating salads every day, it's not going to feel great. And, you know, people don't suddenly feel this burst of energy and I feel amazing. They go through a transition period where their body is adjusting to it. And the same thing with taking medications. And we see this in hypertension with patients with blood pressure meds too. I had a patient this morning who she came to me, she's a nurse, and she actually came to me with a blood pressure of, in the 160s on a 3-drug regimen. So I'm slowly changing her lifestyle, slowly detapering her off of her medicines. She's currently on a 2-drug regimen that I'm tapering off. So we've taken one away so far, and her blood pressure is now in the 120s and the 130s. And, you know, she says, I don't feel that great and I'm a little tired. And I say, yeah, well, your heart's been used to really going against this high pressure volume and this high pressure. And so your body is adjusting at this point. And so I think when we explain to patients and teach patients, and we really do have to hold their hand. I always say the hard work happens between the appointments, not at the appointments.
Yep.
And so it's really, you know, on my patient portal, patients are able to message me quite frequently in between those appointments, because that's where the hard work happens. And that's where people tend to fall off that wagon. And if you can support them in between those appointments and guide their way in between the appointments, then you can have more success with them.
I would love to segue off of that and have you share a little bit about your practice and kind of how you have set that up and what you offer. And like one question, for example, is like what you just mentioned about between visits. So a lot of functional medicine practitioners will have packages and they support their patients between visits. Other functional medicine practitioners might have pay per visit and more like follow up with me if you have new concerns. So how have you structured your practice and how does that work for you?
Yeah. So, you know, it's been a learning work in progress for me. As you know, I started it very abruptly for that one FNP student. And so I started it as a fee for service. And, but in my patient portal, there is a diet journal and other journals. And I actually tell my patients, I want you to use those journals. It helps hold them accountable. And then I can kind of peek in and see what they're doing on the back end, looking at those journals in between appointments. And I do give them, I have transitioned to a membership program. And so in my membership program, plus the fee for service, they have access to me. I call it kind of like an NP in your pocket. And so if they are having rebound symptoms or they're having a hard time with any given treatment plan, they have the ability to message me accordingly and we deal with it right off the bat. And so I generally see my patients initially in consultation. I usually take 2 to 3 hours and really sit with them in consultation and really get into the nitty and gritty of their lifestyle. I even ask them if they have been breastfed as a child, and I like to know how their gut was primed from their, you know, infancy up until now and what's made them arrive here. And then I have a very honest conversation with them about, you know, I have patients that are single moms that work 2 jobs. And so I tailor tailor their plan around that lifestyle. I have other patients that don't have to work and are committed to this lifestyle work full time. And so we go a little bit more intensely with those patients. So I really tailor their plan according to them. And then I see them usually monthly in follow up for the first 6 to 8 months. And then as their symptoms are subsiding, they're starting to feel better, things are going all in the right direction, I see them less frequently, but they're still members in my program. And so I offer two services, concierge and telehealth. And I'm really enjoying working one-on-one with my patients and, you know, giving them that individual experience and that personalization. I have nurses that are night shifters. And so we tailor their diet around what's best for their given circadian and their diurnal rhythm. And I explain to them, this is what's going on with your hormones as you work nights. If you can't switch working out of nights, let's make the best of it and tailor your regimen to this shift that you have to work. And we really look at, you know, light and darkness and how to use nutrients and how to use diet and how to use intermittent fasting to accommodate that night shift diurnal rhythm. I have quite a few nurses in my practice. And in fact, that's how I started my practice, was colleagues saw me heal myself from the inflamed autoimmune state that I was in. And they were like, okay, we're bought in and we want to do this stuff as well. And so, you know, I always say find a provider that can walk the walk and has done this work on themselves, and that will really empower them to teach you some of the tips and tricks on how to make it work in the concrete jungle.
You know, it's funny because I tell my students when they start the course, I'm like, this would be crazy to say in nursing school, hey, you should try all this out on yourself. But in functional medicine, you should try it out on yourself. Yeah. Don't ask somebody to do an elimination diet if you've never done one, because you need to be able to speak to that experience with them. And practicing with the tests is fun. So I always think, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing that, I think, and you can learn a lot from it. So a lot of nurses are excited to learn. And I'm like, do the tests on yourself and get the consult with the lab company and have them walk you through that. And you learn so much from that.
You do. You learn a lot. I mean, that's how I started out, was doing this on myself. And it really helped me understand the patient experience of, you know, there's a saying, it can be simple, but it's not easy. And a lot of this stuff is really simple, but it's hard work. Yeah. And it's hard work in today's challenging society. And so it's really also a little bit about unlearning. And if we haven't done some of that unlearning on ourselves, then how do we, you know, convince our patients to do that unlearning as well? And that comes especially true with PPIs. There's a lot of unlearning that needs to be done with stomach acid and with PPIs. So that's really where I start with people. And I say, this is how I do it. And I know how hard it is. And I get it. And, you know, expecting perfection is never what we do. I use the 80-20 rule and say, if you can do this work, this lifestyle work, 80% of the time, you will mitigate your health issues.
Yeah, I think that's a great reference. Except when you're doing the elimination diet, I'm always like, no, you have to have none. You have to have none. Well, but the rest of the time, we can't expect ourselves to be perfect. We have to acknowledge that there's going to be challenges in life. The last thing I wanted to go back to that you just said was, you were talking about helping nurses and nurses coming to you, is we can come off as woo-woo, especially if we just say we practice functional medicine. We can shut a lot of doors immediately with our peers in our community or in our clinics or in the hospital setting by saying we practice that. I think saying holistic nursing comes off a lot better, but regardless,
yes,
I think that the sending people back better is so important. But when you're talking about working on yourself, when people can see that you're more vibrant and that you're healed and they know what you struggled through and they say, oh, Rita, you look amazing. And I know that you were feeling really poorly. What have you done? Yeah. You are evidence. You're the N of one, right?
Right.
I worked on myself. And that is, you know, there are plenty of people out there that are ready for this and they need that informed person to support them and somebody that can speak from experience and with conviction. Nurses are perfect for that, as you've definitely touched on several times today. I wanted to kind of wrap up by giving you a chance to share your thoughts on nurses practicing in this space and any insights you have for a nurse that's like considering stepping into the holistic nursing space more aggressively than they have in the past, learning functional medicine and focusing more on lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, functional medicine, integrative medicine, and anti-aging and all of that stuff is all linear to one another. And it's become incredibly trendy. And I would say rather than following the trend, start with yourself. Healing yourself. When you heal yourself, you actually heal the world around you. So when patients see you and they see just like what you just said, when they see what you're doing, that you heal. And I get this even with my non-nurse clients. I have patients that say, oh, I really want my cousin to do this. And I say, well, don't push them. Just lead by example when they start seeing you. And so that actually happened with this particular patient. She now has her family members coming to her and saying, what did you do differently? And we want to do it as well. And so when you heal yourself, you do heal the world around you. I've had NPs and nurses come to me saying, do you take students? And you know, can you mentor me? And I say, not until you start doing this work, but until you have done it on your own self. And then you will learn as you go. And so, you know, that's my advice to nurses is really start with yourself, embody it as a spiritual, nutritional, genetic, whatever you want to call it, whatever you're willing to apply at your given state of health, embody that. And when you embody it is only when you can teach it and actually help others with it. And so, you know, I really lead with that. I lecture about this all the time. And I tell people all the time, if my provider isn't applying these principles to themselves, I won't take them on as a provider because it's hard, hard, hard work. And, you know, you do kind of fall into rabbit holes when you don't understand how hard the foundational work is. And then you end up skipping that foundation and just prescribe supplements and do tests and supplements and do tests, and patients don't actually heal. But really it's a healing journey that you're on with that patient, right? And it's a process. And if you haven't walked those steps yourself, you're not going to be able to sell it to other people.
It is really obvious that you speak about this as much as I do. You're really good at explaining a lot of the concepts. I love how you just said all of that.
Yeah, I love this work. Like, I own it, I live it, I believe in it, and it's given me my quality of life back as an autoimmune patient. Like, I still have Graves' disease, but I balance my Graves' disease using this work, and I really try hard to walk the line of implementing allopathy as well, and really truly integrating all of it. I think functional medicine itself also has a lot of problems and rabbit holes that it falls down and is highly criticized for certain reasons. So, you know, even the cost of it alone, I have in my business model for every 15 patients I take a low income patient because this work just cannot be for the rich and privileged and people that can afford it. It needs to be for the masses. And it is very simple work. It's just not easy work.
And in particular, when RNs embrace this and incorporate it into every kind of nursing practice, that's when it can reach people that otherwise it would be inaccessible to.
No matter what specialty you're in, if you're an NP or a nurse working in the OR, you can implement it there. If you're in the NICU, you can implement microbiome science there. If you're in med surg, I mean, you can implement, if you're in pain management, you can implement it there. You can implement it and subspecialize in a holistic aspect of all of those specialties. So no matter what specialty you choose, and even if you don't want to specialize, you can implement the basics. And most nurses already have those tools at their disposal to do that.
And the irony being, because I have students talk about, I might want to niche in this topic or this topic. And I say, but the irony is you will still talk about the same things. You're still going to help people with the same stuff because the root cause is always going to come back to these foundational things for people.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I started out saying, okay, I'm only going to do gut and autoimmune. And that's going to be, but even in my journey with my gut and autoimmune patients, we land at hormones. Yep. We land at brain health. We like because of the interconnectedness of disease processes. And, you know, these organs in our bodies are not functioning independent of each other. So I've had to really learn women's health and step into that arena as well. It's because the gut is the center and then it's connected to everything else. And in a true functionalist way, you do have to be a generalist, like that Ayurvedic doctor in India who's treating the whole body as a whole using herbs and medicines. There's a role for both modalities of treatment.
I was just thinking when you said kind of cardiology stuff again, you know, the real focus in allopathic medicine tends to be on, you know, ABCs. And so cardiology and pulmonology tend to take a forefront a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And you and I both have a background in critical care and in cardiology. Mm-hmm. That was definitely where I stepped off from my nursing practice into primary care. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how those are way down the line when you're from a functional medicine perspective. It shifts to the gut and digestion. Yeah. And nutrients and lifestyle. And it's incredible how your perspective can change. And like you said, yeah, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah. And you know, when you know better, you do better. And so, like, you know, at UCLA, when I was doing all the adult critical care stuff, it was like, oh, it's all about cardiology and neurology and neurosurgery, right? So it's like they were the big guns in terms of subspecialties. But really, even allopathic data is now identifying that everything begins in the gut. And I, even in the pandemic, like my colleagues that were in the ICU and docs that I knew that were working in the ICU, they would say categorically the patients that had the worst outcomes with COVID were the ones that had a dysbiotic or a weak gut. Yep. And so we know that it affects our response to disease, our response to viruses. And patients always ask me, why does this patient get so sick from COVID versus this patient, you know, healed from it so quickly? And I point to the gut and say gut health is where it's at for everything. And so if I get a patient with eczema, we're going to look at her gut. If I get a patient with anxiety, we're going to look at his gut. So it is, I think the data is slowly following in suit now. And hopefully in the era of our children, this will be more mainstream and not so highly criticized. I think it's just criticized right now because there are some weird things out there. There is not a pretty decent or concrete standard of care for functional medicine. And pretty much anyone can call themselves a functional medicine provider at this point in time. So I think it's really important for us nurses to separate ourselves from some of that stuff and lead with the basics and the foundation of the biochemistry of how the body works, which we already have a good background and understanding.
100%. And you with your bachelor's in biochemistry in particular. Yeah. I'm jealous.
But I wish we would have done away with that program, but it was a really tough program. I mean, we got our butt in that program and the passing rate, I think, was like 6 to 10% of it. And that's why, because it was such a tough degree to get, you know? And so that's one of the reasons that they did away with it. They just had such a low passing rate in it. But, you know, I think everything is meant to be. And for me, I landed in this space. And so that degree was perfect for me. I feel like in running my business, I feel like I understand the science of it really well. All the clinical aspect comes really easily. It's all the other stuff I've had to have a learning curve for as a nurse.
It's like today Rita is really grateful that back then Rita did all that hard work.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, most definitely.
I really appreciate you sharing your insights today. I feel like there's so much that we talked about that nurses are going to benefit from hearing. I'm going to share in the show notes. It'll have information on how to look into your practice and connect with you. Awesome. Thank you. And I just really appreciate you being with me today. It was great.
Yeah. And it's nice to meet you. I actually look forward to hearing what comes of your DNP research. I think mm-hmm. that's super cool. So I follow you on Instagram and I follow you on LinkedIn. So I'm going to be really, you know, eager to hear how that goes. I really admire you for doing that. I think we need more data behind this work, and you're out there doing it. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely a passion topic for the many reasons we talked about today. And yeah. I will absolutely share how it ends. It is, we all have to do this work and advocate and participate in research to promote what we're doing for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Rita.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, everybody, until next time, be well. Thank you for tuning in for this episode of the Functional Nurse Podcast. If you want to help spread the word about the powerful role nurses can play as true healers using functional medicine practices, consider sharing an episode with a nurse friend or on social media. And click the subscribe button to stay informed of newly released episodes. You can also visit and share the links below in the show notes for more information on nursing resources and the Functional Medicine for Nurses course offered through the Integrative Nurse Coach Academy in partnership with the Institute for Functional Medicine.